Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, American Savages, to The Savage Truth. I am your host, of course, Cicely Davis. So glad you're able to join me today as we get into this post-debate show. Now, this one is a little special. It's special because, number one, I made a promise that I would bring someone special, and that is my husband. This is my husband, Brad.
Hello, everybody.
Just wanted to welcome Brad. And as I promised, I would bring him in to join me in this conversation to talk about this amazing, this very thrilling, everybody's talking about this vice presidential debate. But, you know, everyone has someone special that they speak to on personal things. I have someone, I have a group of people that I speak politics with, but that person that really knows me the best is my husband. But I thought I'd bring you all in with us as we discuss the debate together. I really want to share my perspective. I'm interested in your comments afterwards. But before we do that, you know my ask. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Now,
I leave them every week.
I do. Now, it's a well-known, everyone knows, okay, especially in this political sphere at least, that VP debates don't move the needle much, okay? No one really puts a whole lot of stake, okay, into vice presidential debates. The purpose of them is to allow the vice presidential nominees on both sides to introduce themselves to the electorate, right, to those who are voting for them, to get in front of those who are still undecided. That's really important. And to brag more so than anything about their running mate, because the truth is, and we can't forget this or lose sight of the fact that this is a race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. It's also a chance, however, to gain some insight as to who the number two is, what that top tier actually looks like for the Trump administration, and who would be number two in the Kamala Harris administration, and to gain some perspective on the choices and the choice-making skills of that presidential nominee, both in their choice and how they actually choose, right? We gain some insight. Donald Trump chose J.D. Vance, a young millennial, comes from very humble beginnings. He had a troubled background. He grew up from the working class. He had a mother who was addicted. He overcame his obstacles, had a very influential and smart grandmother who encouraged him to be his very best. He went on to go to Yale, became an attorney, subsequently becoming senator. And
he carried a weapon in war.
Went to war on the GI Bill for the United States. He didn't actually see combat, but he is a veteran for the United States. And then subsequently now he is vice president. He is a nominee for the Republican Party. He has an amazing, compelling American dream story. And in contrast,
we have Tim Walz.
We have Tim Walz.
Our very own governor.
Our very own governor here in Minnesota, who, well, he was a teacher, but he was a teacher, that's true. And he was a coach.
He was a coach, kind of. He was assistant coach.
Assistant
not really
coach.
A coach.
He wasn't head coach.
He was a coach.
He wasn't head coach.
Went to the state championship, so they said, but it turns out he was just assistant coach.
Yeah.
Kind of like not really there. But I'm sure the coach of the actual team is kind of offended by
sure.
the way that he's been portrayed as the coach that took everybody to the state championship. But, hey, nobody's bothered to ask him.
No one in the media is asking. Nobody in the media is asking. So this is just a reflection of who these two are, okay? So we can take a victory lap by all means for the Republican side. But, you know, we're going to pump our fists very quickly. We're going to get it in the air and pull it back out because, again, this is really, truly about, and we can't lose sight of the fact that this is a race between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. And it is the most consequential race that I think has been electoral race in our history. And I know we say that every
turning point for America. This is absolutely a pivotal election. A consequence of this election will change this country forever. So that's what's scary about this. and getting the attention on this debate, I think, was helpful. I think people got an insight into who these people really were. I think we got to see that Tim Walz is a liar, and that's really all you really need to know. So the integrity of Tim Walz was certainly on display. And for us that live here and lived under his reign, it's not a surprise to any of us. God knows I wrote the man numerous letters during COVID when we had the lockdowns, and I do hold him responsible for the early demise of my father when he was locked in the nursing home and we were unable to attend to him. So that is one of those things that he will never be forgiven for.
Yeah. And there are many other stories as to the impact that the decision-making and the leadership, quote-unquote, of Tim Walz has impacted, and others like him in other states. Now, what I really liked about this debate is that it started out with some really, with chivalry, right? They were both kind and respectful. They started out by actually shaking hands. This was obvious contrast to what we saw in the Donald Trump and Kamala Harris debate. So that was actually nice to see. I think that when we talk about those and refer to those who are undecided, I think that seeing these two, you know, actually shake hands with each other to begin the debate was a really nice start. As we get into the debate, we have opening statements. And what I liked in the beginning was that upon that first question, J.D. Vance takes time to not only introduce himself. He talks about his history. He introduces himself to the American people again. For those of us who have already known him and have seen the trilogy movie, that's great. But there were a lot of undecideds who didn't know him. And so he got a chance to introduce himself. And I thought that was a really great moment for him.
It was a great debate. It really was, from both sides. Yeah. You know, obviously, I just made it very clear I'm not a Walz fan. But I thought the debate was as fair as we could expect. We knew that ABC, was going to be hostile towards Vance, but, it still was, he handled it well. It was informative. I think that it was great for people on both sides. And I do think if you were in the middle and you're undecided, I think that you could look at this debate and go, okay, this helps me make a little bit a better decision, a more informed decision on who I should vote for. And I think that that played well to Vance, more so than Tim Walz. I don't think he necessarily gained anybody over to his side in this, but I do think that Vance certainly has people that were on the fence maybe leaning a little bit over, and that's enough for now.
That's enough for now. And I think that when he tells his story, he introduces himself to the electorate, he reintroduces himself to those of us who already knew him, and he brings up Hurricane Helene. And I think the reason why that was so important, because it speaks to who he is. As a person, he's always mindful of the American people. He's always speaking to us, not at us. And because Hurricane Helene is a crisis, it's an emergency, it immediately put me in the mindset of thinking about how J.D. Vance spoke to Hurricane Helene and to the people who are suffering under those emergency circumstances. And again, our hearts go out to them, and I hope they get help. But it also made me think about being a Minnesotan, how Tim Walz, in contrast, reacted in the time of emergency in 2020 here in Minnesota, and how that impacted the rest of the country. So again, even though the unfortunate death of the death of George Floyd was not brought up, it instantly put me in the mindset of contrast of how Tim Walz, we have on record how Tim Walz actually reacts in emergencies.
He doesn't act. That's all you really need to know. And when they did act, they were more concerned about the COVID restrictions than they were about actually burning down the city. There are videos that you can easily find on YouTube that will demonstrate people literally on their front porches during the lockdowns. And then the police marching down the street in St. Paul and firing paintball at guns at them to move them back inside, and threatening these people that were on their own property, on their own porches, being shot with paintballs by the police department. So that's what Tim Walz is about. He is not about It is. What you see is what you get. And if this is really when it's frustrating to see that demonstrated and to think that people are voting for that person, because it's honestly, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
But if you look behind the scenes, not the story that he's telling, but the actual truth, and that's what he has a hard time with. He has a hard time when it came to talking about the Tiananmen Square. He has a hard time when it talks about being the coach. He has a hard time when it talks about his military service.
Yeah.
And not that either his military service, but the injustice he took by not telling the truth about his actual commission, and the fact that he implied and let people think that he was actually in combat when he wasn't. So that's the disservice that he did to his own service. Nobody else did that. Not Republicans, not anybody else. That was Tim Walz did a disservice to his own military service.
You know, and I think what's really important about that is that we're gaining some insight as to who Tim Walz will be after he is, if he were to unfortunately gain the election.
He'll
as
be
vice
Elmer Fudd. That's who he'll be.
Savage Truth is he'll be Elmer Fudd.
There you go. Savage Truth, he's going to be Elmer Fudd.
Hunting wabbits.
Wasco, you wabbits.
But the truth is that we have some insight. And I like what you said there, Brad. That's really important, is that this wasn't done by anybody else. This was done by Tim Walz. And so if we ever want to go back and understand or know, all we have to do is just play back what these two have actually said out of their own mouths, which is what I've been saying so many others have said. We don't have to pull up any archives. We don't have to look up news articles. We don't have to spend hours looking for interviews and go through tape. And we can literally just play back what they actually have said out of their own mouths. They're telling us, and they've already told us who they are. I will absolutely not vote those two in.
Yeah, as a veteran, Tim Walz, during the crisis in Minneapolis, his excuse for not sending him in was actually to say, he actually said that, well, these are just, they're not getting real soldiers. These are just kids that are flipping hamburgers on the weekend. So that's who you're getting. You're not getting. And it's like, but that's the military branch you served in. So he is just, he's here. It's an embarrassment that he actually was chosen. It's an embarrassment that he's actually our governor. It's an embarrassment, greater embarrassment, that he actually was chosen to be a vice presidential nominee.
Absolutely. So. We are. I am always embarrassed that Tim Walz is governor of the state that I live in.
He's, you know what? He's weird.
But you know,
that's what's funny is that he made that comment, but the only reason he made it is because his behavior is so weird. So it's like a preemptive strike on weirdness. And I think that's what's funny about him, is that he makes this statement about Vance is weird or Trump is weird, but it's actually all of his behavior. He's running around like Chris Farley at these things, and it's like he's just a goofball. And this is this is a choice for people, and people are struggling with it. I'm concerned.
I am concerned too. And I think that what was really compelling to me as we move on, but I thought what really stood out is that J.D. Vance, as you talk about Elmer Fudd and you talk about Chris Farley, and we talk about the man who...
No offense to Chris Farley.
And no offense to Elmer Fudd.
Elmer Fudd, I love Elmer Fudd too.
Is that we're talking about someone who had so much fodder, right, to pick and choose from. And J.D. Vance, as you talked about his composure, did not go for the low-hanging fruit. He had a lot he could have picked on. He could have talked about the weirdness. He could have used a lot of his tapes and a lot of his interviews and words and thrown it back in his face, but he did that. He did not do that. J.D. Vance was very focused. He was very prepared, and he knew what he was there to do.
Oh, yeah, he had no notes.
Right.
He was talking off the cuff, but he was talking from a point of intelligence in everything he said. He made no mistakes. It really was really impressive. I think it's just something that anybody that does public speaking should actually study that, because there was a lesson to be learned there in how in decorum presentation. It was really, really well done. I think that he did a great job, and I think it was evident.
I think that also, Brad, that when you talk about not having notes and you have an opponent because as you know, I ran for office. But when you have an opponent as disastrous as a Tim Walz or an Ilhan Omar, you know, my mother used to say to me often that if you're telling the truth, you don't have to remember a whole lot. And I think that's the position that J.D. Vance was in last night, was that he was just speaking the truth. He was speaking to the American people. I thought he was talking directly to me and connecting with me personally, but he's coming from a place of truth. So there isn't a whole lot to remember. Just reflect the record of Donald Trump.
Yeah, it really was. That's a good point. It really is. He was telling the truth. It seemed sincere. Yeah. And when you look at like Walz, when he was asked about the Tiananmen Square comment, you know, what did he stumbled over his words. His face was red. He got, you know, it looked like he was going to cry.
Hey, Brad, and you know what? Let's play that moment.
Okay, great.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
All I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protest, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Thank you, Governor.
You know, there, when you see it, it really does, it says you could turn the sound off and it still has the same message.
Great point.
He's lying.
Great point.
And, you know, I love when you do listen to it and he says, makes a point of saying, well, sometimes I misspeak. Well, that's
a euphemism.
You're always misspeaking. So I think it's intentional and you're just lying and that's it. You're embellishing the story, depending on the audience that you're in, which we see over and over with Kamala and everybody else that's been running. So it's just a continuous series of lies. And it's frustrating that, honestly, I have to wonder, why do we even have to have the debate? Do we really need it? Because
why
is this so hard to make a decision?
Well, we know this. We know that there won't be any more, for sure, between those two. But you know what? I think that Donald Trump should not waste his time if he... I know that Kamala Harris has obviously called Donald Trump out for a second debate. But as you remember, and I'd like to remind everyone, the first thing a champion does that when he loses a fight, he gets up after being knocked out and says, I want a rematch. And that's because he lost.
Well, that debate was interesting in the respect that I think that nobody learned anything. Like, you didn't sway anybody, you know. Kamala didn't gain anybody more. Everybody that loves Trump is still voting for Trump.
Correct.
So it was kind of an even, you know, I think that Trump did great considering the moderators. And I think that he ultimately won. However, I don't know that we made a lot of movement. I think in the Vance Walz debate, I think we made a lot more movement. And I think it was refreshing to see somebody else speak. You know, other than Donald Trump. And I think that, you know, we've seen Donald Trump. We know his shtick. We believe in him. We believe the story. We know what his passion is. We know that the man is dedicated to this country. Does anybody doubt that? I mean, we have a man who, he's a billionaire, who has given up his entire life to try and support this country. He's put himself in harm's way.
And his family.
And he's continually being attacked, whether it be through assassination attempts or by the Department of Justice and the Biden administration. And who would do that? If you didn't really love this country, why would you do it? Because he's giving up his pay. He's the only president that's worth less leaving office than he was coming in.
Right. So he's also losing money.
And he's still subject to losing money. But he's still doing it. So why is he doing it? It's not his ego.
No.
Because he could go do other things. He could build more buildings. He could do whatever. He'd have far more money. He's doing it for us. He's doing it for the American people. And that is something he is carrying, literally the weight of this country on his shoulders. And I think that that's something that shouldn't be forgotten.
I love that.
That deserves to be honored. And I think what he is doing is just something that hasn't been done in this country probably since George Washington.
Very well said. Well said. And, you know, I want to talk about, if we could, you know, when we talk about the media, as Donald Trump is under attack by the media for sure, you know, no one expected CBS to show up and be objective, right? We saw that Donald Trump actually debated three people in his debate. but they didn't even try to fake improvement. There was a rule that there was supposed to be no fact checking. And what J.D. Vance did was he fact checked the fact checking, or he ran ahead of them knowing that they were trying to. And he got ahead of that and he gave the facts. And so he didn't lose his composure. He simply answered to it. Here's another moment when J.D. Vance reminds the American people of who has been in office for the last 3.5 years in reference to Iran's vicinity to a nuclear weapon, because they're closer now than they've ever been. Let's watch that.
Would you support or oppose a preemptive strike by Israel on Iran? You have 2 minutes.
So, Margaret, I want to answer the question. First of all, thanks, Governor. Thanks to CBS for hosting the debate. And thanks, most importantly, to the American people who are watching this evening and caring enough about this country to pay attention to this vice presidential debate. I want to answer the question, but I want to actually give an introduction to myself a little bit, because I recognize a lot of Americans don't know who either one of us are. I was raised in a working class family. My mother required food assistance for periods of her life. My grandmother required Social Security help to raise me. And she raised me in part because my own mother struggled with addiction for a big chunk of my early life. I went to college on the GI Bill after I enlisted in the Marine Corps and served in Iraq. And so I stand here asking to be your vice president with extraordinary gratitude for this country, for the American dream that made it possible for me to live my dreams. And most importantly, I know that a lot of you are worried about the chaos in the world and the feeling that the American dream is unattainable. I want to try to convince you tonight, over the next 90 minutes, that if we get better leadership in the White House, if we get Donald Trump back in the White House, the American dream is going to be attainable once again. Now, to answer this particular question, we have to remember that as much as Governor Waltz just accused Donald Trump of being an agent of chaos, Donald Trump actually delivered stability in the world, and he did it by establishing effective deterrence. People were afraid of stepping out of line. Iran, which launched this attack, has received over $100 billion in unfrozen assets thanks to the Kamala Harris administration. What do they use that money for? They use it to buy weapons that they're now launching against our allies, and God forbid, potentially launching against the United States as well. Donald Trump recognized that for people to fear the United States, you needed peace through strength. They needed to recognize that if they got out of line, the United States global leadership would put stability and peace back in the world. Now, you asked about a preemptive strike, Margaret, and I want to answer the question. Look, it is up to Israel what they think they need to do to keep their country safe, and we should support our allies wherever they are when they're fighting the bad guys. I think that's the right approach to take with the Israel question.
So, you know, I really love that moment. And like I said, he's fact-checking. He recognizes that, okay, here we go. They made this rule, but they're not going to stick to it. But reminding the American people and kind of putting that proverbial adhesive on Kamala Harris and recognizing that we are in the position that we are and that our enemies across on the globe, we are threatened by them and we are being threatened by them because of the lack of leadership, the lackluster leadership, the absentee leadership of the Biden-Harris administration. And the only reason that Iran feels so emboldened to attack, to take steps that they normally wouldn't, is because of the weakness that they feel weakness. They smell weakness, they sense fear, and they sense reluctance. And you know what? They've made it very clear that, you know what, they're going to take the moves, and they no longer see America as a threat to them.
I think when our adversaries probably have seen the clip of Kamala Harris describing the cloud, I think they're probably not very afraid of, you know, who they're dealing with.
Right.
I think they realize that, you know, the cloud, you know, it's up there. You store all your information up there, right? And it's like, who is this person? Again, that's not going to be very intimidating to our adversaries. They're not taking it seriously. They're not going to take a Tim Walz seriously. They're not.
They're not.
But they know that Donald Trump, what he says, he means, and he will follow through on. I think that the comparison, when you look at, I think for people, if you, let's just say you're undecided, God forbid, but let's just say you are undecided. When you look at, you know, what Vance brings as a vice president to Donald Trump, I think you got to go like, well, that's a team. That is really a team there, because you've got somebody, the way he sounded, the way he spoke, this is a very highly intelligent person. And he will actually be a great person to help administer and counsel President Trump. But what President Trump does is makes decisions, and he makes decisive decisions. And so you have a great team there that I think was just going to be so wonderful and will really change the trajectory of this country.
And let's not forget that J.D. Vance actually served our country. So he understands war. Even if he's never seen combat, he understands the tactics. He understands how our enemies move.
Well, he was
move
in a war zone.
He was in a war zone, right.
Yeah, he was stationed in a war zone.
Absolutely. So he understands how our enemies think, how they move, and keeping in mind that it was always about America first. Before he had even thought or heard of that slogan, it was always about America first. So this is a very compelling team. Again, I just think that when you look at the comparisons of the Donald Trump, J.D. Vance versus the Harris-Walz ticket, there is not a choice. There is but only one choice.
If people aren't worried in this country for, and they think like, oh, well, you know, we don't have to be worried. Nobody's out to get us. We have, what, 16, 20 million unregistered illegal aliens in this country right now?
Correct.
And you think that, let's just say that 1% of them were actually terrorists. You don't think that would be a concern?
Oh, it's a concern.
It's not a matter of if we're going to be attacked. It's a matter of when, because it will come. It will come from within, and it will come
Our very own soil here in America.
We saw it with 9/11. They're very patient,
and they're willing,
and they're willing to do it. And they literally hate America, and we continually put people into office in this country currently who hate America.
Who hate America. Yeah.
They hate Israel, they hate America, and we keep reelecting them.
And if I could, at this moment, I just would like to say that, you know, when you talk about a model and you bring up Israel, look at the tenacity that they go at their enemies, right? Day in and day out, defending their country, defending their right to protect themselves without fear or hesitation. That used to be America. Under the right leadership, under Donald Trump, that's who we were, that stronghold. So, you know, to those who are, you know, all of our number one ally in Israel, I hope that we really truly are giving them all the support and help that they need and deserve. But I'm just really, really thrilled and feel so very, I just cheer and I feel so very inspired watching Israel as they do not hold back and defending themselves against their enemies. So I want to talk about a few other moments. You brought up the moment when Walz actually lied to the American people right in front of all of America. Okay, we knew that, but to just actually watch him lie was amazing. But my favorite moment was when J.D. Vance actually talked about, as the CBS host tried to fact check him on the mules, that the child trafficking, the mule, that children were being used as drug mules across this country. Let's look at that moment.
Will you separate parents from their children, even if their kids are U.S. citizens? You have 1 minute.
Margaret, my point is that we already have massive child separations thanks to Kamala Harris's open border. And I didn't accuse Kamala Harris of inviting drug mules. I said that she enabled the Mexican drug cartels to operate freely in this country. And we know that they use children as drug mules. And it is a disgrace. And it has to stop. Look, I think what Tim said just doesn't pass the smell test. For 3 years, Kamala Harris went out bragging that she was going to undo Donald Trump's border policy. She did exactly that. We had a record number of illegal crossings. We had a record number of fentanyl coming into our country. And now that she's running for president, or a few months before, she says that somehow she got religion and cared a lot about a piece of legislation. The only thing that she did when she became the vice president, when she became the appointed border czar, was to undo 94 Donald Trump executive actions that opened the border. This problem is leading to massive problems in the United States of America. Parents who can't afford health care, schools that are overwhelmed, it's got to stop, and it will when Donald Trump is president.
Senator.
Again.
Oh, he was so great in this moment. He showed such strength. This is about him telling, you know, they were trying to say that children weren't being used, and he just kind of reminded everyone. They cut off his mic. She had this snarky comment coming in at the end. Thank you for reminding us of how the law works, or her comment about that. But He was just stating the facts and reminding the American people and the undecideds, okay, for those who may be not informed, that it was Kamala Harris as the border czar who did absolutely nothing, but she bragged about canceling 95 executive orders as put in by Donald Trump, right, to keep our country safe. She bragged about canceling those orders, was deemed the border czar, did absolutely nothing. And only after she had a supposed, now that she has a promotion, all of a sudden, she actually wants the border to be closed, supposedly. She actually wants the wall, running a copycat campaign.
Yeah, now in the last 2 weeks, she's sent out more tweets that actually mention the border than she did in the 3.5 years that she's been vice president and the borders are.
Let's not forget went to the border without a mic.
Oh yeah, they didn't mic her, nor did they mic any of the border patrol because they were afraid of what everybody would say. So, we've got this situation where it's just pandering. She panders to everybody.
Yeah.
And they just don't tell the truth. And they're not going to tell the truth. And yet somehow they keep, she's in this.
Gaslighting issues, gaslighting the American people, trying to lie and fake their way into the presidency so that they can gain control in order to, destroy our country from within. I think that when we say that this is the most consequential election of our time, that is not a mince of words. That is so very serious. And people have to really think and stop at this moment and just, it's not even just about being objective. It's about literally caring about yourself, your family, your property, and your future. Because what we saw last night was just a snippet, just a tiny, tiny little bit of what and who they actually are and where we're headed.
And, even last night, Tim Walz tried to include the little piece about the fact that, no one's coming after your guns. They're both, he's a gun owner, which I believe he is.
But your running mate.
He's also said that, and he made a comment, too, that made sure that we knew that Kamala now is a gun owner, too. Which I think would have been interesting if somebody would have asked her when she said that she was a gun owner exactly what kind of gun she had. Is that is that a revolver or is that a semi-automatic? And then what brand, what model, what caliber is that? Ask her some questions about that and watch that she couldn't answer any of them. But now we're to believe that she is a pro-gun, even though she said that she wants to take your guns away, but now she's pro-gun and she's going to shoot somebody that comes into her house. She's not going to shoot somebody that comes into her house in Minnesota because under Tim Walz, you're going to be held responsible for that death. So she better not be shooting them in Minnesota. So let's look at how Minnesota is run. He kept bringing up Minnesota. Another thing that I'm going to...
Go ahead.
We're getting towards the end, but I just want to bring up one thing. They're always bringing up the abortion. It's the one thing that the Democrats are, your body, your choice, that is what they keep talking about. And then they bring up these horror stories about the rapes and the incest. God forbid that, a woman, there's incest and she can't have her abortion. What do we do then? And I was thinking since that rapes account for about 1%.
Less than 1%.
In 2023, there was about a million abortions in 2023. So let's just say it's 1% for the sake of math. The incest abortion is about half a percent, if it's that.
Yeah,
and so that means that of the million, we've got about a 5,000 that would belong to incest. We've got 10,000 that would belong for rape. So let's just say we give them those. Let's just say, there you go. So now, but you can't have the others. Now we just, look all the lives we saved. There's only 15,000 abortions now. And, maybe we could do this one thing that's called, self-responsibility. Like we could actually hold ourselves accountable because I'm still confused on why there are so many abortions. It's just become like this is the alternative to birth control. They don't have that. We're just going to have abortions because it's just so easy. They're plentiful. You can get it anywhere. You can run over to the corner drugstore, get one, and it's over and done. And it's become there's no responsibility. And I thought, God, if only there was like some rule book that we could look at that where there was like maybe, I don't know, nine, maybe even 10 rules. If there was just any, did anybody think of anything that would have 10 rules that we could follow as citizens that would help
like
us?
Like written in stone,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, something, Nate. Yeah, exactly.
Written
something,
in stone.
If anything was out there like that.
Right. I'd be all for it.
I would be for it.
I'd be all for it. Oh my gosh, I love it. So, you know, I thank you for that. I appreciate that. You know, there was a moment where as Tim Walz began to feel a little bit more confident, he started shaking his head and he was kind of nodding. He would even make the comment that, you know, J.D. Vance and I are not that far away on this issue. And I started thinking about that after the show, after the debate was over. And I said, you know, I thought he was playing, you know, being a little strategic, but I realized, think about this, Brad, and for you listeners and viewers, what Tim Walz was actually doing inadvertently was giving, kind of creating a permission structure for Democrats to vote for Donald Trump and J.D. Vance.
Absolutely.
What do you think about that?
I agree with
you.
You
know what I mean?
I think he was very, I think he's a smart, smart man. I think he's very strategic in his thinking. And I think he understood that, you know, that their differences, it was nice to see, I think everybody enjoyed the fact that actually they did get along.
Yeah.
And I think that that made the debate a little bit more tolerable to listen to. I thought it was informative for everybody. I thought you got to see who really they were because they weren't necessarily completely defending each other. But I do believe he started very early giving that permission slip for people that were on the fence to say, well, you know what? Look, they're not that. And look, he is the better choice.
Well,
and so we'll see.
I think that Tim Walz in that moment was showing that he has an ounce of intelligence there, but recognizing that he was just so very defeated. I think that as we wrap this up, is that I like to think about what the Harris administration was thinking after that debate was over, that we can't allow this guy to speak in public ever again because not only is Harris bad, but this guy isn't good at selling Harris. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to help me. And he just hurt her even further.
I think it's hilarious that we have people that are actually pro Kamala and they don't realize, like, she's not supposed to be there. She's not actually supposed to be running for president. She didn't actually earn the position. They literally staged a coup on the sitting president of the United States.
Correct.
What don't you understand about that? Because they didn't take him out because he wasn't capable, supposedly. So why did they take him out? Why did they remove him?
Well,
they removed him simply because he couldn't win.
That's
it. And that is the only reason they took him out. They staged the coup and she stole that position.
What I like to remind people is that when Kamala Harris was a Democratic nominee for president, she earned, they liked her, so they disliked her so much. She didn't even get 2% of the, they hated her. Her approval rating as vice president was terrible. Now, the second Joe Biden dropped out, right, or was actually booted out, all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, she's the greatest thing. What happened? Nothing changed.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. This is a farce. This is a farce of a campaign.
They lied to us for 3.5 years with Biden.
Right.
They stage a coup and they stick her in.
Right.
They were stuck with her, but, you know, that's what they did. And it's a bad choice. But what's scary is that there are Americans out there, neighbors,
right,
family, that are actually considering voting for somebody that has stolen. There is a staged plan to steal that election away from Joe Biden so that he couldn't lose it. It was that's all there was to it.
So,
and now we sit here and we look at this and you have somebody who is not intelligent. Kamala Harris
is not. That's the savage truth of the episode.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
There you go.
Savage truth is Kamala Harris is not an intelligent person.
She's not intelligent. Not smart. She's not smart. She's not savvy, right? She has no ability. She hasn't had a real job. She hasn't made any real decisions. She's running a copycat campaign. That's another savage truth.
Yeah, she's stolen ideas from Trump. She piggybacks on anything she can, that she panders to every audience. I mean, she could change her voice like nobody's business. She can speak Creole, I believe. She can speak Japanese. She can speak Chinese. She can speak, you know, Hispanic.
Whatever.
She's got whatever. You just tell her what you want. She's going to deliver on it. So, you know, that's what you want for president. I'm scared.
Yeah. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Brett, this was fun. It goes by really quickly, doesn't it?
No, I had a great time. Thank you for inviting me. I feel honored to be your first guest. Wait a minute.
But
I wasn't her first guest, so now I'm a little offended.
Ooh, number two. But now you're number
place.
One in my life. You're number one in my life. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone. And you know, my ask is always the same. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Get out and vote. Early voting is now. Early voting is now, folks. We can win this. We can save our country. We can get it back. And remember, as always, what do we say, Brad?
Put the pistols on it.
What do we say?
I don't know what we say.
As always, be bold,
be strong,
be faithful,
be true, everybody.
Till next time.
Thank you.
I'm Cicely.
I'm Brad.
This is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.